Absolute Rally, powered by the Kielder Works team. Cordless tools tailored for the world of motorsport.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally, Episode 3, Season 18. Thank you so much for the first two downloads. I hope you've enjoyed it. Obviously, we had a bit of a retro feel. Episode 1, Episode 2 was catching up. Obviously, we had Hayden Padden, and we also had the boys back together. This week, slightly different feel to this week's podcast. We've got Julian Porter at the top of the podcast. Hello, Jules.
How you doing? Good.
I'm good. We're all right. Are you dried out now from GB?
Yeah, to be fair, I got really wet in the media zone on Saturday night. But other than that, I didn't really get wet. We went to Brennig on the Wednesday to interview Elvin Evans, seeing if his WRC win. I noticed in the iTunes it was their final stage of the recce, and I thought, hang about. So I called Anna from M Sport. I said, I've got this great idea. I want to interview Elvin. Can we do it at Brennig on the lake, by the lake? And I was thinking, it was all weather dependent. We had a beautiful day, sunshine all Wednesday. Thursday was not too bad. It was just cold though, wasn't it? You know, it was a bit cold, but I got quite wet Saturday night, but that was the only time I did get wet. The rest of it was just a bit chilly. But you know what? We had an Indian summer the week before, and then the week of Wales Rally TV turns up and it starts to just turn. The autumn feel definitely came in. And that is the same every year. Next year, we're probably going to get an Indian summer all the way through October because we're not going to GB till the end of the month. It could be much better.
I've said this a couple of times on the pod, right? I was genuinely kind of thinking, you know, early October, you know, the times I've done GB and when you've done it, Jules, it was always November. And I was thinking, I think they're getting off light here, really, this early October. Well, it's practically summer for us in the UK. How wrong was I?
Yeah, but it's great though, isn't it? It is great because I think... for me, we would have had a dusty rally GB, but we have a predominantly, all of our gravel rallies are dry. So when we get a little bit of rain in Turkey, like we did on and whatever day it was, Friday afternoon, we're like, wow, we've got a gravel rally that's wet. Yeah, brilliant. And I'd be gutted if we went to GB and it was dry. we do need those differences. We have to have, it's a world championship. We have Monty on snow and ice. We have Sweden on gravelly snow. Then we've got your gravel. Then we've got your tarmacs. We've got your Turkey that's demanding and needs a different strategy to it, a rough rally. Argentina's a bit rough, you know what I mean? But there's so many of these stages now, these rallies, they're trying to cater for car one down to car 89. And they're trying to make the roads as perfect as possible, which is not an issue, don't get me wrong. But when we have every rally looking the same, we do need a difference, and Rally GB always gives you that difference with the weather and a bit of fog and the dark stages. So I know they've come in for a bit of a hammering for more than one reason of Wales Rally GB, but it's definitely
a rally car with a lamp pod on Rally GB, no matter what you want to call it, it's a given. We've got to have dark stages.
Yeah, if it was up to me though, right, personally, I didn't have an issue with Land Udno service, but I was disappointed we couldn't get everyone on the front, because that was my image of, wow, we've got Land Udno, they're going to have amazing
all
on the front.
We all had the same image, I think, in our heads.
And then these big new super hospitality units can't fit on there, and I was like, kind of defeated the object. But I spoke to two or three team principals, and they said everything worked. They had power, they had Wi-Fi, they had all their stuff they needed, they had the water that they needed. And the routes that the organisers had made for them to come in and out of service to the controls, to and from the controls, was fine. So they said, yeah, it'd be great if we could all be on the front, but this has worked. From a working point of view, it has worked. I remember I turned up on Wednesday morning, I was thinking, where are we going here? Who's where? Where's Hyundai? But yeah, taking it to the people, I think, is a good thing. The one big thing that I would have changed massively, and this is just, it might just be me, I don't know. Alton Park, right? When I did the rally, when you did the rally, Sundays were always stately homes, all that kind of stuff. Chatsworth, Donington, Silverstone, whatever it was, you know what I mean? And for me, I would have run Alton Park in the daylight. Even if it was only for the first 1 hour of cars for the TV show, I'd have run them in daylight. I'd have got them in there at 5 o'clock rather than waiting till 7 until it was dark. Because, yeah, the weather went against them because it was raining, but you couldn't see anything. And it was just a load of head spotlights. The fans were getting wet, and all they could see was spotlights. If we'd run it in the daylight, they'd have got wet still, but they'd have been actually able to see the cars. And what you could pick out from some of the cameras was there were some massive slides because it was wet. Tarmac road, gravel tyres, gravel setup, and they were some big power slides. We couldn't see them. And the Old Hall, the first corner on the stage, you've got that beautiful building in the background of Old Hall. We didn't see that. We saw it on the recce. Seen all the photographers were standing there for the recce getting these beautiful shots. Didn't see it on the rally. So I personally, and it's no different from when we went to Mexico City 2 years ago to that famous square, Zorroco Square or whatever it's called, that was famous for in the James Bond film. Everyone's telling me, this is going to be amazing. It's going to be absolutely amazing. You should see it. Have you not seen the James Bond film? I haven't, to be fair. No. I didn't know what it looked like. And I went, you will be blown away by what it looks like. It's going to look outstanding. To which I replied, but we're doing it at 8 o'clock at night. It's dark. We're not going to see it. And they went, never thought about that. And we didn't see it because it was dark. And I don't understand why we need to run these Thursday night stages all the time in the dark. I personally would like to see them in the daylight, give the fans something to really see, give the TV cameras something to see. That's just my opinion.
No. Do you know, I know Upton Park quite well.
It's a pretty circuit.
I instructed there years ago and years. I'm going back 20 plus years. But anyway, what I was going to say was, if you know the area, right, it's one of the darkest places in Cheshire.
Yeah.
There's no natural light because of naturally where it is, it's a circuit. There's no other light. So you don't get a bleed over from anywhere else of any other light. So it is incredibly dark. And I know it sounds really obvious thing to say, but most places have a bleed over from something of light or whatever. And that place didn't get. And do you know what? Everything you've just said, I completely agree. I was talking to a pal of mine only the other day who's been doing the circuit championship. And it was the first thing he said. When they announced it, he said, we've done that event as part of the circuit championship the last couple of years. And he said, it is like being on the moon. He said, it's just pitch black. He said, I must admit, I wondered what it was going to look like. And he said, it kind of turned out what I thought it was going to look like, which is exactly what you've just described.
Well, Gary Champion, he did the camera filming and everything for the big screens, and we used his feet on all live. And unfortunately, because the rain was coming in at every angle with the wind and everything, the cameras were getting water on the lenses, and it just, once you got the spotlights coming directly towards you, you just can't see anything. In the daylight, you would have probably still had the water on the lenses if it was raining at that point, but at least you'd have been able to make out there was a car there rather than just a glare of spotlights. So it's something that I've mentioned three or four times to people within events and things like that. I understand why we wait. People have got to finish work. That is the main reason.
Do you know what, though, Jules? Sorry. Right. But they've got work on Friday, but yet we still rely on the fact that they're going to be there watching on the Friday.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Whereas maybe they only have to take one day off work rather than 2 days.
Okay. Yeah, I love that. Okay.
I don't know, but it's... I think sometimes we're trying to showcase the sport, and let's put it in the daylight. The other big one for me, and Mexico did it through the year we went to Mexico City from the start, 2 years ago, because we normally start in Guanajuato, which is probably the most picturesque town you ever go to in the World Rally Championship. All these, a multitude of buildings, different colours, different architects and everything. It's just very, very, very special. World Heritage Site, that tells you how special this place is. And we always do it in the dark. Well, 2 years ago, because it wasn't the start, we went through the streets of Guanajuato on Friday lunchtime. You should see the photographs from Guanajuato street stage on Friday afternoon 2 years ago. They are incredible. Tiny rally cars in these little streets, all this massive sea of colour from the city itself. And they just look absolutely, and I said for years, why do we keep doing it in the dark? Why don't we do one in the daylight as well? Mexico did it. I'm not saying they did it off my request by any sense of the imagination. And the photographers and the TV were like, this is amazing. This is just staggering. you know? So, yeah, do it Thursday night to start the rally, but then go back maybe to, if you can, because on Guanajuato, we go back through the street to Guanajuato to get to and from those Friday stages. Why not do it again on Friday evening in the daylight and just show off this massively pretty town and show off the great racetrack, you know what I mean, of Alton Park and places like that. But that's just this is me thinking, and that's because I'm thinking, I can't really see that on the telly. It would look much better in the daylight. But I understand some of the reasons why they do. They want more people in. People have got to finish work and things like that. But I hear it was a sellout. I mean, there was probably a lot of very wet people, but I hear it was a sellout, which is the most important thing.
Absolutely. But moving, there's so many things I want to talk to you about on the event, but I really want to get to, we're perennially crap at predictions on this podcast. All four of us were hopeless. We got close, but probably the closest we've actually been for quite some time. But I genuinely thought we were going to see an Ogier win. And the reason why I say that, Jules, is because he is possibly one of the best drivers during my kind of time, if you like, of watching rally and everything else, with his back against the wall. Because you could argue over the years that I think there was only one season where maybe two seasons where I think that Lowe possibly had his back against the wall like this, and he came through. And it was close. I think the one with going into GB with Mikko, when Mikko was a point up, I think is the one that probably screams out mostly. But certainly not with a two or three events to go where, you know, your dominant champion is completely on the back foot. And, you know, if in boxing terms, he's down on points and he's going into the 12th round. And, you know, I don't know really. I just felt there was going to be something pulled out the bag. Now, maybe he did pull something out the bag. Maybe I'm doing him a disjustice here. What do you think?
I mean, you can never, ever underestimate Ogier. As you say, he's won six world championships, isn't it? You know, and last year he went into the last three rounds out the back door. And you're like, this is never going to come. This is never going to come. And then he says it himself. The difference is he knows how to win a world championship. Oyton Thierry don't. And he doesn't panic about it. He gets frustrated, cranky. We saw that, you know. And it's just... we did an interview for the Spain preview with Oyton. Every time, whoever wins the rally, it's kind of a requirement they're meant to do. Obviously, depending on certain situations, it might not happen, but... the rally winner comes to see WRC TV for an interview, 15-minute slot. And we try and either do it before the press conference or after the press conference, depending on their travel plans. And we watched Oyt all weekend, Oyt, Thierry and Seb. I'm on the limit. I can't go faster. It didn't matter what the question was. That's it. There's nothing more. And I brought this up with people over the season. I brought it up with Ogier over the year. And I now say, I think in Formula One, Hamilton says we had Valtteri Bottas 2.0 this year, you know what I mean? It started to, I kind of go, we've got Seb Ogier plus one, because he's on the limit everywhere, and then all of a sudden, bang, he pulls it out of the bag. And, you know, Tanak tells us every time, I'm not going for power stage points, and then he does it. And and that run, the first shot we got of Tanak from outside, from the helicopter, he was whacking a bank on one side, which flicked him into the bank on the other side. I'm thinking, man, dear me, if he doesn't pull a tire off the rim, he's yeah.
Tommy's face was a picture, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think I counted six or seven banks that he hit relatively hard. And I remember saying some kind of line in commentary to John was, apparently he's been on the limit all weekend. I can tell he's not been driving like that all weekend. And so I asked him about it. I said, you keep telling us, the three of you keep saying we're on the limit. And then you go, the three of you go and do what you did in the power stage. And he went, yeah, that was on the limit. I said, yeah, but you've told us you're on the limit all weekend. He goes, yeah, but the power stage was on the limit. All right, but how much is in reserve for the other 21 stages? Well, not a lot. And I said, and you know, you watch the three of them, virtually not one mistake from the three of them over 300 kilometers, 308 kilometers was the rally. So that's over 900 kilometers the three of them drove between them. and virtually not one mistake. The odd bank clipped here and there, a stall from Tanak. It's quite staggering that the level that are, and they are at a different world. I mean, we did an interview again for the Spain preview about Petter's final rally. And I said to him, what do you think of the championship fight? And Petter's been there, done it, got the T-shirt. And he said, he goes, everyone's on it. He says, every driver in the World Championship factory teams are on it. He goes, but then there's those who are really on it. He says, everybody wants it. I says, and then there's those who really want it. And he goes, there's three of them. He says, there's three of them. Tanak, Ogier, Neuville. He says, those three are a step above everyone else. And we've seen this now for definitely last year. You know, we have seen, Chris Meek said at the end of the rally, he's never driven so hard for a fourth place.
Wow.
Now, at the start of the season, Chris Meek probably would have won that rally. If he'd driven at that pace in the first three or four rounds, he probably could have won the rally, being definitely in that fight, not 15 seconds down the road. Now, we're talking 15 seconds. Wow. That's not a lot. It's a lifetime at the minute. Because that is the difference between those top three who are having to put it on the line and the rest who are trying. It sounds derogatory, but they're all trying, but for different reasons or for different kind of forecasts or whatever, of Chris Meek, once Latvala crashed out, had to finish. He had to finish. If he didn't, Tommy McInerney would have probably kicked him out immediately. Because he's going for a driver's championship. It's double bubble for Tanak. If he wins for himself, he gets his points, but so does Toyota. What they needed Chris Meek to do was finish. But Chris did say he'd never driven so hard to get a fourth place ever. And then you've got Mikkelsen fighting for his life and fighting for Hyundai. And they're all fighting for something. But Meek, Mikkelsen, once they're established in that second place position on that event for the team, there is probably 1 or 2% left on the table because they know they can't make a mistake. And that 1 or 2% is a huge gap now when you look at the top three. It's quite staggering.
Yeah.
What's Tanak got to do? He's 28 points, and he needs to score two more points than Ogier or Neuville, and he's won the World Championship. Does he deserve it? Probably yes, because he should have won Monte, should have won Corsica, should have won Argentina, should have won Sardinia. He probably should have won the championship in Germany.
can I ask though? And you said this just now with regards to, you know, Seb Ogier knows how to win a championship. Do we think that? Listen, he's probably got no better boss to have. Can I wind it back? You know, can you know, Tommy said, you know, numerous times he's very difficult to read. You know, he can't read Hoyt himself, which is all very well and good when everything's going your way, as it were, and clearly at the moment he is. But do you think Tommy can detune Hoyt almost to behave and not get sucked into that fight?
Tony, we never competed at that ultimate level. We competed, and sports people are generally very, very selfish. You've got to be to get to that level. Now, playing football, you can kick a football around at any point, any time. It doesn't cost you anything in your back garden to kick a football around. To go rallying or any form of motorsport costs huge sums of money. So there's a massive amount of investment has gone into getting to that level. And people say to me, God, these guys, they don't have anything else in their lives. No, they don't. Because every waking moment goes into being successful. And there's so much money gone into it. Hoyt Tanak, like all of them, is massively selfish. And he cares deeply about his family. I've seen the Tanak movie. It is a phenomenal movie to watch, of how he cares about his family and his kids and everything like that, and how his wife, Jannica, protects Hoyt on a rally, doesn't tell him about what's going on, about the family. The little boy wasn't very well. She didn't tell him. He was like, oh, how's the little boy? Oh, he's fine, totally fine. He wasn't very well. She said, I cannot distract him because he is, it's all about rallying. The family takes so much pressure to allow that one individual their opportunity. And yeah, download the film, watch it. It's fantastic. You really do see another side of Oik Tanak. I still get worried. You open the door on Oik Tanak at a stadium, you go up to him in a service park, and you don't know what you're going to get. Because if you ask a question that he thinks is daft, even if you think it's a really good question, he will just cut you down, and he won't care. He will not care at all about it, about making you look silly. Because it's in theory, I can't be bothered wasting my time answering that question. You know what I mean? You know, when he has to restart on a rally and do restart rules, I can't really be bothered with this. You know what I mean? Until I get to the power stage. We saw him trundle around Sunday in Turkey because he didn't really want to be there. All he wanted to do was just go straight to the power stage. And if he could have, he would have. But he had to do the rest of the stages. All of them are selfish. Tommy Mäkinen knows that. I interviewed Tommy about this exact thing on Thursday in GB. I said, how do you manage them? I said, you've been there, Tommy. I said, you tell Oik, just get the points, just get the points. He leaves the service park and thinks, yeah, whatever, Tommy. It's all about me. And Tommy goes, I've been there, done it. I've done exactly the same thing. Yes, Andrew Cowan. Yes, Andrew Cowan. I know, Andrew. Yes, yes. You can rely on me. Shut the door down the road. Right, here we go. It's all for me. And it is, you know? It is. And it's the strangest situation of Sebastian Ogier won the world championship last year in an M Sport Ford Fiesta. Very few people remember who won the manufacturers' championship, which is Toyota. And the manufacturers are all, because they're investing millions, they want to win the manufacturers' championship. But people never really remember who wins the manufacturers' championship. Yeah, but they remember what car the driver who won the world championship is was driving. It's the strangest thing.
Yeah.
And as a sport, we need to kind of change that, because if it wasn't for the manufacturers, we wouldn't have all of these drivers there anyway. You know what I mean? So we do need to try and put more emphasis on manufacturers' championships. But Ogier, I think this one is going to slip away from him unless the Toyota, it's super fast, but it is the most fragile of the three. Who knows? Citroën have never been beaten in Spain. It's not a tarmac car. It seems to love that Spanish tarmac. Never been beaten in Spain in the new generation rules. Take away the 4 years of Volkswagen. Citroën have won every year since 2005. You know what I mean? When Ogier, you know, they won 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Then it was Volkswagen for 4 years, and then they picked up when Volkswagen stopped. They're very dominant in Spain. They need to be dominant. They need to beat Tanak. To be fair, I'm not really bothered who wins it. I'd love to see Oik win it. I mean, so much hard work, you know. You've already said it. Watching Seb fight back again, he's like a caged animal, isn't he? Never gives up. Don't corner him, because he'll just keep coming at you. To see him actually pull it off again would be great. But then Hyundai probably deserves something, you know what I mean, for all their work and effort. And has Neuville been like a Latvala and a Hirvonen? Has he potentially missed the boat because of the Ogiers and the Tanak? But winning a world championship is so hard in anything. It's so hard in anything. And Ogiers and Loebs make it look quite simple, but it's far from it. The work that goes into it, the effort, it's staggering. And this is why Oik got so close last year and didn't do it. Why Neuville's been so close and not done it. Because it's so hard to do it, and I don't know.
I asked the boys on the podcast last week, and I'd love your take on this. If, and it is a massive if, because for all the reasons we've just been saying, and the points difference and everything else, if Seb pulled this one off, would this be deemed to be his best ever title?
I think you're going to go some to beat 2017.
Okay.
With M Sport. And that's pure and simply, for me, he went from totally having everything he wanted at Volkswagen. His own engineer for dampers, his own tyre engineer, his own whatever engineer, you know what I mean? Everybody had their own people. He goes to M Sport and you've got George Black and his assistant. And that's not, I'm not dishing George Black, but George Black is looking after the three works cars, yep. the three or four R5 cars, and Seb's in theory in a queue when he comes in. Oh, George, he's talking to somebody. You know what I mean? Whereas yep. when he got out of the car at Volkswagen, it was, this is what I want. What do you think? They had their own people. And damper people, he had his own damper man. He goes to M Sport and there's three or four guys building dampers, but he hasn't got his own. They're building dampers for the whole team, all the R5s, all the WRC cars. And we know, even though it was a clean piece of paper with those cars, M Sport did not have the money that the other teams had. You know, they did not have that money. And to do that, for me, probably was the biggest achievement I couldn't tell you when. You know okay. what I mean?
No.
Him winning that year, and then also they took the manufacturers as well, which was the biggest shock. Them winning that year, him winning in that car that year, not that the car was rubbish, but because the team, he'd come in. When did he sign? Just before Christmas?
Yeah.
Week before Christmas? You know? And then he wins Monty. He then wins in Mexico, wherever it was, and all of a sudden, Corsica. And you know, he made the difference that year. He did make the difference.
I still get
disrespect for Malcolm or anybody.
I still get goosebumps. You remember the video that M Sport put out? I think it was a Christmas party.
Yeah.
And it was Malcolm saying, well done, everybody. This is what's going to, and then he just finished it off by saying,
yeah.
And we've got Ogier. And I genuinely still get the tingles thinking yeah. about it now. So, yeah, I completely get it.
And that call only came about 10 minutes before Malcolm went into the room from yeah. Seb. It was, Malcolm thought they were going to shut down that night and he wouldn't know. And the call came about 10 minutes before Malcolm was due to go into the office, into the hall to kind of say his thank you. So, but yeah, and, you know, they obviously built a very, very good car. But for me, Seb was the one. And I spoke to people within M Sport that year and they went, he's made us believe in ourselves again. He's made us believe we can win because they've gone so long without a win, 2012 or whatever it was. And they said, he just cared about everybody. So if he wins this year, it'd be an achievement. I think Walter Roll's the only other one to win in three manufacturers. But Citroën obviously have a big budget. They don't have the biggest budget, but they have a bigger budget than M Sport had. You know, and it is what it is. You know what I mean? And
can I ask something about that? Right, genuinely, we've just talked about M Sport and Malcolm. We've been talking long and hard about Toyota and Tommy. Are they the differences here for the drivers? The people at the top, because I'm not going to, you know, this isn't digging anybody out, far from it. I just think perhaps there's a different, you know, we've seen Adamo come in at Hyundai, you know, he reminds me very much of a football manager, to be honest with you. And I've used that analogy many, many times. You know, he's a hard man. I don't know too much about, I know he was part of the customer side at Hyundai before he got promoted. And obviously, you know, Citroën, you know, Pierre Bedouard, you know, I don't know too much about his background with regards to competition and stuff like that. But obviously, Malcolm and Tommy clearly have got heritage themselves. Is that the difference?
Well, if you look at it over the last couple of years, yeah, it is. You know, Jos Capito had been in the sport as well all his life and things like that. So, you know, when Citroën were their massive heyday, Keith Freckelan was the man masterminding, you know what I mean? Maybe it is. I don't know. Maybe they, I don't say care about it more, but they've been there as drivers and they know how tough it is. Do they manage their drivers better? I don't know. Is it because they've been in the sport as long as their mechanics and as long as their drivers or longer than their drivers have that they gain that little bit of respect? I'm not sure. I'll be totally honest. I'm not sure whether I'd want to run a world rally team. Well, I would, but I don't know whether I would. You know what I mean? I'm not sure whether I would or not, but it's the kind of like, it's so tough. I mean, Andrea Adamo, I mean, everyone's like, I mean, I actually just used to do my stuff with Andrea, kind of do his basic interviews. And it was in Germany where our relationship changed, where I think I'm sure it was Germany. It was Germany. I don't think I've had a... Well, I had a bit of a one in Portugal where Soda and Loeb stopped with the fuel pressure issue or fuel flow issue, whatever it was. They didn't tell me what it was. And I went to see Andrea and it was all just one-word answers. And then he said, do you think we're so stupid to do that? And I was like, flipping heck, I'm not going anywhere here. And I started to think, like, am I asking really bad questions? And I was thinking, I don't think I am. And everyone thought it was brilliant. So then when I had to speak to Andrea in Germany about Sordo gearbox, he said a couple of harsh things, but that's his personality. And I didn't take it to heart because I felt the questions were more than justified. He maybe didn't really like them. And then afterwards, he gave me a big hug and called me a name in a kind of potentially, I was hoping at that point, a loving way. And then the next day, I was thinking, oh, God, here we go again. And Andrea walks past me in the regroup in the media zone and he calls me this name again and then smiles and winks. And I think, okay, that's maybe a sign of respect then. And ever since then, just since that day in Germany, whenever I go up to him, he goes, right, he says, I take you only coming to talk to me because you want to talk about bad things. He says, you never come near me when we're having a good rally. He says, you only ever come near me. I said, they seem to send me unfair. When there's a tough question to ask, I said, I seem to be the one. I said, you seem to hug me afterwards and things like that. But it is such a, there's so much money invested, 40, 50, 60 million euros or whatever these teams are spending. It's a big business. And I don't know.
I've just likened him to a football manager. And I guess, you know, because he's brought in, I call it a loan signing almost, to use a football analogy. You know, he's brought in Craig for a few events and things like that. But it's interesting. I was very interested, you know, as we record this, I'm going to pull away the smoke and mirrors this week, folks, is that we're recording this on the Friday of the 11th of October. So yesterday, Danny Sordo was announced with a limited program with Hyundai. I wasn't surprised by that, Jules.
What surprises me most of all is Danny Sordo has not been looked at by every team. If I had a World Rally team, Danny Sordo would be one of the first names on the team sheet. Sure, yeah. Not every rally. He doesn't really like Sweden. He's not brilliant in GB. Finland is not. He says he will go to those rallies, but he openly admits, there are better drivers on the market for those three rallies. And he's happy to step aside for them because he's not bothered about going there and looking a bit rubbish.
Yeah,
he's happy to do a 7-10 round program, more than happy, because then he can concentrate on what he really knows. It also gives him really good road positions on the gravel rallies when he turns up after having missed two or three events and then goes to a Sardinia. All of a sudden, he's out the back on the road position on day one, and the guy can really excel. And Danny Sordo, for me, he's great. I actually sent him a text when it was announced. I kind of said, I tell him as well, I always tell him, you'd be in my rally team. And I sent him a text saying, oh, it's a shame. Good job I'm not setting up my rally team next year because you've already signed. And he replied with a voice, oh, he says, yeah, one day might happen kind of thing. But yeah, he's great, you know. And you can see why Hyundai keep him. Now, what's interesting with Hyundai, he's got 7. We know Loeb's got 6. That leaves 1 empty for that, let's say, the third car. But as we've seen with Andrea, he's swapped Mikkelsen out. He's brought Breen in. I think Breen will be in Australia. I mean, he did blot his copy, but with that roll. He didn't mean to roll. And this is what amazes me. Everyone goes, oh, he's gone and crashed. He didn't mean to crash. He didn't do it on purpose. I'll tell you what, I'm going to go and crash this, see what my boss says. That's far from what they're trying to do. But he could turn up in Australia, could bring, because he's going to have a very good road position. And if they've lost the Drivers' Championship by that point, Hyundai, they desperately will want to snatch the manufacturers. And they could let Breen just run cut free. You know, if he's running 9th, 10th on the road, he could win that rally from a road position on Friday. And it wouldn't surprise me if Breen appears in Australia for Hyundai. Would not surprise me.
If, you know, we were all, you know, and when I say we were all, us on the podcast, we spoke about it quite a lot because it was a bit of a unique, it was kind of harping back to a period of time where we did have specialists come in, Jules, You know, you think back to the three car, and Hyundai tapped back into that again this year.
Adamo says it in the interview we did with him in GB. He said exactly that. He says, I remember when I was growing up watching Lancia and Ford and these teams bringing in specialists for certain rallies and rotating their drivers to get the best possibility for the manufacturers. The Drivers' Championship wasn't... The manufacturers was the first thing that came.
Yeah.
Then the drivers came several years later. And it was all about, well, we need this person for this rally, we need that person for... I mean, sometimes Mikkola and Vildegaard and people like this, they were driving for three different teams in 1 year when it wasn't a Drivers' Championship. Because it was, well, he's brilliant on ground. Oh, we need Finland. Oh, my... they were all calling for Mikkola in Finland. Then when we get to tarmac, Oriol, we need Oriol. And, you know, and Adamo actually alluded to that in this interview. He said he remembers growing up where Lancia, Ford, teams like that were basically, it's tarmac, I need Loeb and Sordo in my car with Nouvelle. Oh, it's gravel. Oh, it's Finland. Right, I don't need Loeb or Sordo. I've got to take two others.
Yeah.
And that's what he's done. They've kept Nouvelle as their priority to win the Drivers' Championship because Nouvelle did the best job over the first five or six rallies. It would have been interesting to see if Nouvelle had had a shocker and Nicholson had had a good five or six rallies, you know what I mean? What would they have
done? Yeah, absolutely.
That would have been an interesting call because Nouvelle is number one in the team. So, but yeah, it's something that he's told. Bring home the manufacturer's championship. It's manufacturer's championship.
Where I was going to go, and again, it's obviously we're not there yet, but that's, you know, as I say, harping back to that, you know, we all raised an eyebrow and we were all kind of quite quizzical of it, you know, obviously consistency and things, you know, seat time and all these things that are always thrown out there about, you know, keeping the driver in the car to give him confidence and things like that. You know, does it help taking the driver out? All those things. Okay. But so far, it's worked for him. But if it gets to the end of the season and that doesn't bear the fruit of either a manufacturer's or a driver's, then questions will invariably be that, you know, should we be pulling drivers out? Where I'm going with this is, of course, Danny's just been announced on a limited program again. I'm thinking, well, if it doesn't work and Danny's been announced on a limited program again, how does that bow for 2020 when clearly the 2019 strategy really didn't work?
My honest opinion of this is if it doesn't work, all of these drivers are way better than I ever was. If it doesn't work, it proves that you're predominantly two. You've always got two drivers, haven't you? Are mega strong, and then, and particularly in Hyundai, you've got two drivers who are kind of seen as 1-2, and then the third car mixing. It kind of maybe tells you your second driver is either inconsistent, struggles a bit on some events. We know Andreas is not brilliant on tarmac. You know what I mean? That's why they dropped him for the two tarmacs. It would tell me that you need to invest in another driver.
Okay.
Now, we don't know what Tanak's doing yet. I heard so many stories in GB about Oit Tanak. For me, I'm not sure Toyota believe they've got him for next year yet.
Wow.
I think he could... Malcolm Wilson would love him. Genuinely, Malcolm's not got the money. He'll openly admit that. They've got a new car coming in 2023 or whatever it is, these new regulations, I can't even remember when they're coming now. They have to invest into that car if they want to remain in the World Rally Championship. They can't go and pay 8 million, whatever he's demanding now. Crikey, every stage win, there's another number goes onto that. You know what I mean? Every rally win, another zero goes onto the end of it. He's got to be 7, 8, 9 million, hasn't he? He's got to be those kind of figures. Malcolm can't pay that. He can't afford that. With all the will in the world, Hyundai can, Toyota can. Citroën don't need to. They've got Lappi and Ogier. They're already paying huge money for Ogier. I asked Oit Tanak straight out in GB. We asked him about the calendar for next year, And he goes, yeah, we've got these rallies, blah, blah. I said, the other thing we don't know, I said, what car are you going to be driving next year? And he goes, I don't know yet. He said, I thought I'd have known by now. He says, I don't know what's happening. He says, people, I don't know the exact words he used, but he's basically, he says, people are dragging their feet, so to speak. Those weren't his exact words. He goes, but I thought we would, I would have known by now. He says, but we'll announce it when we know. I said, so you have no idea yet? And he went, no. I've been told he's been to Hyundai. I have been told that. I've not seen a picture or anything. I've had it that he has been to Hyundai. There's no harm in that. He was seen coming out of M Sport in, was it Turkey? Or Germany, maybe. Germany. He was seen coming out of M Sport in Germany. He's a free agent at the end of the year. He can move around. I asked Tommy Mäkinen, when are we going to know about your driver? About Oit, what he's doing? And he went, he says, I think we've lost the pen for the contract. He says, we can't seem to find the pen. We can't seem to nail him down. Is that Tommy saying we've lost the pen, but we actually have lost him? I don't know. It's intriguing. And Danny was always going to take his Hyundai role. He's happy there. He knows the car. Brilliant. He didn't need to learn anything new. Every other driver, Mickelsons, Breens, Evans, Sunanen, are all waiting for Tanak to put the signature somewhere. And then there's just going to be a massive kind
wacky
of
races.
Wacky races to find out. We've had it when Ogier was deciding what he was doing. Everyone was waiting for Ogier. So Tanak is the cork in the bottle. Once he decides where him and Martin are going next year, that's it. It's a free-for-all for everyone else. Right now, people are saying, why would he leave Toyota? It's the fastest car. It's also a little bit unreliable. We can't deny that. It is a little bit unreliable. They're catching up. They're getting on with it. I'm not sure whether Oit sees eye to eye with everyone. You know, he's quite vocal. When you see some of his interviews, when it stopped in Turkey, his interview with Colin on the side of the road, how can we fight for a championship when we keep having these issues? That's a pretty harsh thing to say.
Yeah.
You know, your bosses back in the service park are thinking, whoa, hang about, mate. We're paying you several million euros a year. Yeah, granted, the company, don't throw us to the wolves. You know, you can say those things behind closed doors, but Oit will say it out in the open. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Ogier will say it out in the open because they are selfish. It goes back to that conversation 10 minutes ago. What are these people like? They're selfish, but they have to be selfish to be at that level. There is no other alternative. And if you've got to be cruel to be kind, you've got to do it. I don't know yet where he's going. Toyota said we might know their lineup before Spain, but I'm not sure whether there'll be an Estonian flag, where that's going to lie, a Hyundai or a Toyota, after hearing various things in GB, I'm not sure.
Let me ask you another question then. Out of the three drivers of Toyota that we know of that have been in the 2019 season, how many of them do you think will be, aside from Oit, will be in the 2020 season?
It depends on what Oit does. If Oit stays, one has to go to allow Robin Parra in.
Yeah. Do you think, I've got a bit of a theory on the Robin Parra one, and I could be completely and utterly out, and I know nothing, as people like to point out. I know nothing. This is just me playing team boss, I suppose, from the sideline.
Yeah.
I believe that the fourth car that they've been using for Takamoto, Katsuta,
yeah.
Sorry. I can see that being a shared car next year for him and Cali for a year.
That was a big rumor two or three rounds ago that there would be a satellite team, but it would be Robin Parra the whole season, Katsuta coming in and doing whatever, five or six.
Right, okay.
That does seem to have just disappeared off a little bit now.
Okay.
I still think the Katsuta thing will happen.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It has to happen, doesn't it? That was kind of part of the gig, really.
That has to happen. Yeah, I mean, that has to happen. We see Katsuta again in Spain in a World Rally car. That has to happen for him. But I think Robin Parra is ready now. I do think he's ready. And You know, he's done, I think he's done all the rounds now of the championship at least once. He can test until the cows come home in Finland because it's free testing for Toyota. They can put him in the car from the day they announce him until the day Monty comes. And it won't cost them a test day if they do it in Finland. You know, he could just turn up and know everything about the car. Yeah, he's got to learn Monty. He's got to learn, well, I mean, he can learn Sweden in Finland. Do you know what I mean? On the snow, when it snows in Finland. You know, he's got to learn the tarmac side of it. But I think probably Robin Pair is ready. If you read certain motorsport publications this week, it seems that Chris Meek potentially is going to be chosen. If they have to choose between Meek and Latvala, it seems right now, at this moment in time, that Meek is ahead of Yari at the minute. Granted, Meek is ahead of Yari in the championship as well. So that's a logical thing. If that's where Tommy had to decide between one or two, if he would take the one who's highest, it's a no-brainer. When I say it's a no-brainer, it's an easy argument, isn't it? Of, well, I'm taking that person because he's higher in the championship. He's delivered more for us. I'm not sure what Yari Matti would do if that happened, because I think that would just crush him. You know?
Yeah. I've used this analogy before, though, Jules, and I could see it quite easily happening. I could see him back at M Sport. I could see him with Malcolm with his arm around him going, come on, Yari, let's have one last push of this.
You're the most experienced
driver.
Biggest problem you've got is the Japanese.
Yeah.
If they're so loyal, they would see it as not disrespectful, but they kind of like see it as a bit dishonest of, well, we've pushed him out the door. We've made him leave. And yeah. Hanninen is still their test driver. Hanninen is still the Toyota test driver. He goes over to Japan, does a load of work for them in Japan. But Yari Matti's heritage in the sport, Yari Matti's love for the sport, what better ambassador for a team with such history that Toyota have, and to have Yari Matti Latvala as your ambassador? It doesn't get any better.
Yeah, no, I love that. That's a really good point.
But does Yari Matti want to quit? He's 34 years old. That's all he is. Chris Meek's 40. Does Yari Matti Latvala want to stop at 34 years old? Does he, hell?
Yeah.
But he might be offered such a deal to stay as an ambassador stroke test driver that he might have no real option. And I don't. It's a really, really tricky one and a really, really tough one. But if he wants to leave, he could end up back at M Sport very easily. Yes.
Yeah. You know, aside from everything you've just said, and I said this even, you know, we had Hayden on last week, and I don't know whether I mentioned it to Hayden or whether I was talking to the guys about it, but there is something cathartical. Is that even a word? Cathartic? cathartical, I don't think is a word. Cathartic about M Sport. You know, you think about the drivers that have gone through M Sport, you know, through the system. You know, we think about Thierry, we think about Seb, you know, who all, you know, don't get me wrong, Seb didn't have his career reignited, but, you know, Oit's gone through that process as well. You know, he's been in and out at M Sport, and, you know, obviously there's a lot of history there as well. But there is something about Malcolm that does seem to kind of sort a driver out a little bit, and I can kind of see it in so many ways, because Yari, you know, people forget Yari was driving an M Sport car at 17 years old, you know, doing the British Rally Championship. He was in a Focus, you know, I can remember it as clear as, you know, it feels like yesterday to me, to be honest with you. So, you know, he's got such a long history with M Sport. And I can just see it, but everything you've just said, I'm going to contradict myself here massively, I can see as well, and I completely get it from the Japanese side as well. So
yes.
I guess we'll see. You mentioned calendar, Jules, and I'm really conscious of time, by the way, of how long I've had you for.
Yeah.
The calendar was announced, of course, a week before GB. And what were your thoughts with regards to the ins and outs of the calendar for 2020?
I mean, Africa's my favourite place other than England, so I'm delighted to going back to Africa. It won't be a safari rally that we had in the past. I was lucky I managed to do two, which probably weren't as daunting and demanding as the ones that I didn't do. Safari's great. We did interviews with all of the drivers about them. Everyone's delighted that we're going back to New Zealand. Absolutely over the moon. A couple of people disappointed Corsica's not in there. True, proper, proper tarmac rally. You know what I mean? The real hardcore tarmac rally. I have to say, it's a bit of a pain to get to Corsica, depending on where you live in the country, but a bit of a pain to get there. I enjoy it. I love it from a sporting point of view because it is so difficult. It's a bit old school. If you make a mistake, you're going off and you're not coming back on. You know what I mean? It's it doesn't need man-made chicanes to slow people down because there's enough corners, you know? Times will move on, and the promoter, I think, want to be back on the mainland in France. You know what I mean? And it's kind of like an encouragement for the FFSA to come on. Let's get hundreds of thousands of people watching this run like we did in Alsace in the Lobe era. You know what I mean? Not just the diehards who are going to Corsica. So, Spain leaving was a little bit of a surprise for me, just because it's such a well-run rally. Granted, even if it had run next year, it was going to be an all-tarmac affair because there is the gravel stage that we used, they were going to be the last time they were going to be used for this year. So it was going to turn to an all-tarmac affair, which, you know, we do have a predominantly heavy gravel season, so to speak. But, Japan had to kind of go there, didn't we? You know what I mean? With Toyota. That's a tarmac rally from what I've been told. So we do retain a tarmac rally. I know we lose Corsica, Spain. We do get one back there. And Germany in October, that could be interesting. I tell you, that will sort the cat amongst the pigeons. I tell you, voice from the girls.
A wet tank test track. What could possibly go wrong?
That will sort them out. But generally, I think what the promoter is doing, whether people agree with it or not, for the sake of the sport and the teams in it, they are doing the right thing. We're trying to make it a world championship by going back to Africa, back to Japan and things like that. But also the new deals that they're doing where basically it's a little bit like Formula One. They're having to pay more money to be in the rallies. And that money's been then distributed throughout the championship. You know what I mean? So that is where it is key. And you look at Formula One and they're going to all sorts of kind of places that some of us have never, ever heard of, but they're doing it because of the money factor and to keep the sport strong and to keep the sport kind of self-funding, so to speak, or self-funding to a degree. So I totally agree that with that. And we're not going to some bad places. We're going to some great places like New Zealand, Africa, you know what I mean? I thought, depending on who you speak to about Chile, it was in a strange place in Chile. You know what I mean? The town didn't really offer much, but the stages were brilliant. And at the end of the day, like I say to most people, like when we go to Australia, I love Coffs Harbour. Tiny little town. I love it. Not many people do. But the stages are great. And at the end of the day, it's what happens on the stages that is the most important thing.
Absolutely.
And, you know, if we keep having these big fights between drivers and teams, that's what sells a sport. It's not because we're in some big, massive city or some little kind of ramshackle town wherever we are in the world. You know what I mean? It is the sport itself that sells it. I appreciate we want to go to towns or to cities where it can house us and also can put on a bit of a fanfare. You know, you do go. I remember when we went to Japan the first time, Over Hero was the first couple of years we went there, and the rally took over the whole town. You know, everywhere you went, they were, oh, you're here for the rally. And they all had, like, be it rally menus or rally stuff in the windows. When we went to Sapporo, I remember putting fuel in the car on Sunday morning, and this petrol pump attendant goes to me, so where are you from? Oh, from England. So what brings you to Japan then and Sapporo? And we'd been there the whole week.
Yeah.
And he had no idea the World Rally Championship was there. He worked in a petrol station. you know, because the city was too big.
Yeah.
And we were in one part of the city. So, you know what I mean? Places like Perth, you know, were brilliant in Rally Australia. It was just a, it was a big enough city to house us, but not too big to lose us. It was that kind of, like a Manchester kind of thing, you know what I mean? A big city, but people, everyone will kind of know that the rally's coming, so to speak, in Liverpool and Manchester. That kind of thing is what we need. I don't think we need capital cities, because there's way too much else going on. But yeah, I'm happy. 14 rounds. For me, I'm pay per event. I'd like 24. But I'm never going to get that.
Good man. Do you know one thing we haven't touched upon, Jules? And obviously, mentioning Spain didn't remind me of it. Of course, what GB, the other thing, what you know, thrilling finale to JWRC. And, you know, I think we've got to tip our hats a little bit to what went on there. And obviously the prize, which is a phenomenal prize. You know, you guys covered it fantastically and you spoke about it quite a bit. But Jan Solans, I think it was, who won the championship.
Yeah. Really quick kid. I'll be totally honest with you, coming into the start of the season, he wasn't on my... I knew he was quick because of what he'd won in Spain and France and things like that. I knew he was quick. But I didn't expect him to shine like he did this year because predominantly a tarmac guy. Then you fire him into... Like, he'd never been on snow before. Well, did well in Sweden. Okay, got some points. Corsica, he made a mistake, but won a load of stages. And I was like, that's probably his only chance. Goes to Sardinia, the roughest rally they do in the year, and he goes and wins it. And you're like, wow, hang around. How do you manage that? Then goes to Finland and does an amazing job in Finland. And you're like, kind of, he's got a chance here. And yeah, you know, the Spanish Federation, if I'm honest, and I've said this to the relevant people, the championship was probably better because Tom Christensen, who finished second, he was always looking at it as a two-year deal. And he did say to me, he goes, if I win this, he said, I'm not really sure what to do. He goes, I'm not ready to move up. He said, I want to be here for 2 years. He goes, I'm not going to lose the championship because of that. He says, but I kind of want to do this for 2 years and get some more experience of the whole world championship before I step up. And I think the Spanish Federation as well, Jan Solans is mentored by Carlos Sainz. So I think as a career progression for M Sport, because we've seen this year with Emil Bergqvist, he's only done two rallies. He won the car, he won the package and everything, but he didn't find the rest of the money to fund it. So he's only done two rallies. I think Solans will put a full campaign together because I think the Spanish Federation will get involved with him. And Jan has said that he would like to remain at M Sport. We did an interview with him after the rally. And he goes, I want to remain at M Sport because they have a factory team. They have a works team. He goes, why do I want to go somewhere else? He said, one, I've got a Ford Fiesta. He said, but I could run it by, and he can run that with anybody he wants. He doesn't have to run that at M Sport.
Yeah.
But he said, I want to stay at M Sport. He said, because I want Malcolm Wilson to see me. He goes, and I want to be able to go and talk to Malcolm Wilson all the time. He goes, because I want to progress up the ladder into their WRC2 pro team for the following year. And then pretend, you know, so he knows it's going to cost him more money to stay at M Sport, as in running costs. But he's also thinking, but it's a great opportunity because I'd be hanging around with Malcolm Wilson all the time. So he's quite switched on. You know what I mean? He's quite switched on. So
not a bad mentor either. And to have a direct connection to Malcolm, of course, as well.
Carlos Sainz and things like that. He's doing Spain in an R5 car now. That was part of his deal. I don't know when that kind of prize came towards him, but I said to him at the end of the rally, I said, so when do we see you next? He goes, all being well, if everyone sticks to the agreement, he said, I'll be in Spain. I said, oh, in what? He goes, in an R5. He said, that was kind of something that was put to me. If you win the championship, we'll send you to Spain in an R5 car. So it looks like he's going, whether it be in a brand new R5, like a Mark II or a Mark I, I'm not sure. Because, I mean, I know he's got his car, but I think this is going to be actually an M Sport car that the Spanish Federation and Carlos and them are probably going to sort out. But it might be in his own car.
Did you see his social media when he flew back in? Did you see the videos of people waiting for him at the airport? Oh, brilliant. I love that.
That was actually his co-driver.
Okay.
That was his co-driver coming home.
Yeah.
Because Jan and his brother Neil, they drove home.
Oh, right, okay.
He'd driven his recce car to the rally, so he had a proper recce car. He decided to go there with a proper recce car. So they drove home 2,000 Ks back to Spain. I don't know when he's home. He might be home now or something. You know what I mean? They set off on Monday with all the trophies and all the stuff in the back of the car. And yeah, they drove back. Proper privateers driving down on the rallies. You know what I mean? But it's a great championship. It really is. A massive prize. And some great battles during the year. It really is. It's phenomenal. So
be interesting to see who comes back next year, as you say, is that 2 year plan. Because I know there's a couple of drivers that I know of that are probably going to move on. I think Sean's got to move on because of age, unfortunately, and he had his best result, unfortunately.
I know he's a regular on your show today. Whatever we are, what are we? What did you say it was? October 11th.
Yeah.
Testing an R5 C3 from Santalot for the first time.
Yeah.
So he's testing that. So whether he goes with that with WRC2 or whether he goes to ERC and remains in ERC, I'm not really sure yet, but he's having his first day in an R5 car today to assess his options and possibilities.
Fantastic. Well, we will catch up with Sean very soon and find out what he's up to. But Jules, we've done a podcast together, which is lovely. Because it's not very often we get to do this.
Bore the living daylights out of everyone for you.
No, far from it. Listen, mate, I thank you for your time, and you can go and get back to doing your pacing now. So thanks for joining us. Julian Porter, obviously. Folks, we'll be back after this break.
This is Absolute Rally.
Whether it's the pressures of service or an issue out on the stages, it's vital to have the right equipment to hand. Kielder cordless tools are tailored for the world of motorsport and are being used throughout all forms of competition.
Go back to the future with the Kielder Works team.
Hi Phil, welcome to Absolute Rally once again.
Thank you.
Are we all relaxed now after now, you and I spoke before Wales Rally.
Hang on. I was relaxed last weekend.
You were relaxed last weekend? Well, actually, you were. You weren't relaxed enough, though, to get on the roof of the car, Phil.
the team owner from Volkswagen was saying, please don't stand on the roof. And, of course, there's only one person in this world that respects team orders, and the other one didn't. So I did as I was told, actually.
Really? Yeah. There you go.
Yeah, I did, yeah.
On your last WRC event, and I used that word potentially, decided to toe the party line.
I did, and I thought I did a good job, but somebody else didn't listen. That's the problem.
I can imagine, but still there you go.
Roof skins are quite expensive, you know.
I believe so. Well, you know now because you build cars. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe you relate to it a little bit more now because you're building cars for people.
Yeah, I think that's probably it.
Brilliant. Yeah. But what a weekend. It was designed to be a farewell tour event, and you know, we all wanted a great story, and we got the story and we got the result. And now, when did you think you were going to get the result and not the story?
Well, we started off all along, we thought we were going to finish sort of fifth or something. Friday was a real messy day for us. We had almost no testing in the car. I think we did 40 Ks in the car. It was delivered midnight on the Monday before the recce. We did 40 Ks in the car and off we went. So Friday was a bit of a mess and we couldn't really get to grips with what was going on. And then Friday night we changed the diff and the suspension springs. The first stage next morning, about 5 Ks in, we realised that we got the setup that we were looking for. So when we got to Meyerhen and Havre, we decided to have a push. And that's where we pushed and that's where we made all the time. So it was just, if we'd have had a longer test, I guess, beforehand, we'd have been a bit more competitive sooner. But we were quite happy to be where we were on the Saturday and then decided to push. So that was the point, really, Saturday morning.
It is a little bit of a... I was looking at a few things, and it wasn't quite the last time. The last time you and Petter did GB together was as the Citroën Junior team which did give me a wry smile when I
noticed that. It wasn't the junior team; it was the second team. But yeah, I see what you're coming from.
It was under the junior banner. That's what made me smile.
I could have been. Yes, it could have been.
But I was trying to decide what you'd be called this year if you were the junior team then.
What would we be called now?
Yeah.
Well, Citroen, Volkswagen, Zimov team or something.
But do you know what?
We claimed the title of one of the old. Even John Kennard couldn't beat this one. Petter and myself had a combined age of 101 inside the car, so we didn't do so bad, you know.
But do you get an award for the oldest finishes? Is there an award for that?
I don't know.
There might be a trophy out there that with your name on that you haven't got.
There could be. Yeah, we'll have to go and have a look.
It's a couple of years since you've sat in an environment like that with Petter. To me, he looked better than ever. You know, what was it like inside the car?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably it. We decided to go and have a giggle. We were not really going for the win, especially on the Friday, and we decided just to have some fun about it. So we had fun, and I think if anybody would probably relate to it, if you're relaxed in the car, the results are automatic anyway. So we just decided to have a laugh, not get too upset about the odd stage time that we didn't do very well on and things like that. And we just kept plugging on. And I think that's, in any relaxed environment, if you don't try too hard, it's like going out for a night out. If you don't plan it, it's always a disaster. if you fall into the pub that you didn't go to plan on, you always have a good night. So it was one of those, really. And we didn't plan it. We just chilled out the whole time, and then the results just started to come.
Secretly, did he want to beat Junior?
Well, obviously, there's a competitiveness there if they're making a cup of coffee together, you know. So, I don't know, really. I mean, we knew that Oliver was serious, or is seriously fast. Yeah. And I don't think the intention, like I said, we honestly thought we'd have been about fifth in the category at the finish, and that was sort of where we were expecting to be, and we had no idea that we would be so competitive.
You've obviously since you've stopped, you've still been doing stuff with Elvin and stuff like that, but what was it like to step back in? You know, we said it flippantly at the beginning there about the circus, the Solberg circus, because obviously all of a sudden it's like somebody flicks a switch and people turn up. Yeah. You know, and you know, Petter just draws people in. What was it like to go back into that world after leaving it so long ago?
It was, yeah. I mean, it's been an awful long time, but without sounding smart, I must be honest, after two corners on the recce, it was pretty much business as normal, like we should have been away. Two corners into the shakedown, it was like, okay, well, this is what we used to do, and here we are doing it again. So there was no real big shock. It was just business as normal, really. I sat there, did my job. He sat there, did his job. The only thing we did say was on some of the road sections coming back each night, we've got out tired of it. And we never used to say that. But, saying that again, if you listen to the hardened regulars, your Tannocks and your Newbells and that, they were all saying how tired they were because the event was quite tough. So 14 hours a day in the car is quite tough on anybody, you know.
I think so.
No, it was business as normal, and just like we'd never been away then.
It is a great story, but you know, again, before we started recording this, we spoke just very briefly, and you've got family and stuff like that. This has kind of been a bit, you know, your voice has been on there too recently. And you know, so my young son, even though he's not even speaking yet, knows your voice. Now I'm going somewhere with this. I will send you a picture of this at some point so you don't think it's weird. My son is 2 years old. Okay. Yeah. He takes a car to bed with him. What car do you think he takes to bed with him, Phil?
I have no idea.
2007 Subaru Monte Carlo car.
Yeah, well, good choice. Your son has got good choice, I must say. Yeah.
He's 2 years old and he's still playing with cars with yours and Petter's name on. That's the point I'm trying to make.
But the worrying thing is, does he know my voice better than yours? That's a subject that we could have a lot of fun with, but we not on this interview.
Perhaps this isn't the forum for it, Phil, but I'll be honest with you. He doesn't listen to me, but he listens to you. Well, I'd like to think he listens to you. I'm not too sure whether he knows it yet, but he likes the steering wheel anyway. So.
Oh, well, I'm glad he's enjoying dirt, even at 2 years old. And we are going to do a little bit more on dirt in the future. There will be some extra bits to do to that. I don't know when, I'm not a clue, but there will be some more.
Oh, brilliant. Now, is there going to be any extra bets to do with Petter?
No, we've had the ceremonial burning of the pencil case. that's now gone. And if you ever see me in a pair of overalls on a WRC event again, you can shoot me or something. No, that's it now. It's gone. Yes, I will do the odd rally, and my son is just starting rallying. And yes, I might do a club event or something. I don't know, but you won't see me.
Driver or co-driver, Phil?
That'll be taken in. Watch this space, but there will be not much in the way of competing from myself, no, that's for sure.
Do you know when your son's mates come round, and they all play the games and stuff like that, is it a bit of a thing now they've met? Because I'm imagining your success period would have been when your kids were quite young. So, now, obviously, you know, their friends are coming around. Your dad's on that game. Forgetting all about the fact that you were a world champion, by the way.
Well, they link themselves together online, and seven or eight of them play the game, all linked together at the same time. So I think my son thinks he's winning the dick swinging competition when it comes to being linked together and playing dirt. Yeah, that is for sure.
All right. Well, you're back to your day job now, as I call it.
That's a reality, covered in oil and shit and rubbish. Yeah, sorry, I can't say that. Yeah,
no, you can say that. It's fine.
Yeah, it's fine. Okay.
So what's coming up for Viking then?
We're off to Killarney. We've got a very special event in Killarney coming up end of November. That'll be in the press quite soon. Makes a very exciting driver, new car, and all the rest of it. And then next year we're starting the European Historic Championship in Costa Brava in Spain. We've got Australia Classic, New Zealand Silver Third. We've got Morocco. And we're building a very exciting pre-war car to do extreme long distance vintage rallies such as Pekin to Paris and London to Casablanca and so on. So we're going into vintage cars as well. And at the minute we're putting together a 1939 Chevrolet. So lots of different things. 1 minute we're in a WRC car or an R5 cutting edge car, and the next thing we're in a 39 Chevy. So variety is the spice of life at Viking Motorsport.
Absolutely. Listen, I couldn't have put it best myself. I thank you so much for coming on, mate, because obviously we spoke quite a lot kind of offline about it. But thanks for coming on and sharing it with the listeners. Folks, we'll be back same time, same place, in little podcast hole next week.
Absolute Rally. Powered by the Kielder Works team. Spread the word and download the podcast every week.